are listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast.
Until the light takes us, am I right, Bog?
Hello, everyone. Welcome into the Fundamentalist Podcast. I'm your host, dual guest, joined as always by Peter Bog and Richard Donahue. On this edition of the Fundamentalist, we're going to be discussing the brand new Metallica album, 72 Seasons. Whether you're reveling in celebration or recoiling in horror will remain to be seen. But to spice things up, we'll be giving you a top 10 list of the classic golden era Metallica albums, tracks wise, of course, and a top 10 list of everything Black Album and beyond, sandwiched to bookend this 72 Seasons review that we have. So it's a very special Metallica-themed edition of the Fundamentalist Podcast, and we thank you for joining us. Gentlemen, I also thank you for joining us. How are you both doing?
I'm doing well.
Hungover, but making it.
I mean, isn't that normal for you?
That's pretty like much
modus operandi.
I'm also still running high from going to Chicago last weekend to Metal Threat, which is fucking great.
Very briefly, and I know it's very difficult for you, 2 minutes or less recap, Metal Threat.
And we're going to cut that shit off, man. I'm going to play you off the air if you run long. So just know that, you know, okay. If you hear the Cannibal Corpse in your headphones, that your time is over.
There were some lineup shakeups right before where Sister dropped off Undergang, Frenel, especially Undergang. But if they were 10 years to get a chance to see him. But still, the phenomenal fest. A bunch of great bands. The Discontent, Imprecation, Cyanide, Ara Noir. Just to insane amount of talent there. Got a lot of good friends that from Mississippi, New Orleans. I don't really see. Met some new people here. Actually, I met the bass player of that Finnish band, Cadaver Incubator, actually. He wanted a cigarette. He's like from Finland. We started talking about morbific and death metal there. It's like, oh, I just played with them last week. And it turns out he was the bass player of that band. So that was actually pretty cool. Aries Kingdom played, but I have a solo episode.
Let's go back. The member of the band bummed a cigarette off you.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a good story.
This is the level of economic freedom death metal affords you.
Yeah. So I'm going to the hotel. It's like I have a cigarette. It's like, yeah. And he says, Friendly. I was like, that's cool. From Boston the other day. And it started to all know how much I love the death metal scene there. I brought Morbific, I'm a big fan of. So yes, we just played.
Not enough for him to afford his own cigarettes, apparently.
Apparently not. Apparently not. But it was a great fest. It was a solo episode coming out very soon. This next upcoming week, just get some more detail. But highly recommend it. Paul Dunsky is going to bring it back. The creator of the fest, I think he said around October of next year. I would definitely keep an eye out because it is great.
Thank you very much for that recap. Thank you for keeping it 2 minutes or less. Okay, let's get into the aforementioned festivities. Starting off with our top 10 list of golden era Metallica tracks. Now, the golden era, according to the Fundamentalist Podcast, ranges from Kill 'Em All through And Justice for All. With that being said, Richard Donahue, give us your top 10 list, starting from number 10.
All right. I do have an honorable mention, The Thing That Should Not Be off of Master of Puppets. Fucking great track. Cthulhu, always an awesome metal subject. Coming to number 10, we have Eye of the Beholder off And Justice for All. Coming following that, number 9 with the title track And Justice for All. Number 8, Fight Fire with Fire off Ride Lightning. Number 7, No Remorse off Kill 'Em All, the only song off Kill 'Em All I have on here. Number 6, Frayed Ends of Sanity from And Justice for All. Number 5, Creeping Death from Ride the Lightning. Number 4, Disposable Heroes off Master of Puppets. Number 3, Blacken, again, off of Just for All. Notice a little trend here. Number 2, Leper Messiah off Master of Puppets. And number 1, which they used to say so in the past few years, To Live is to Die, the instrumental off And Justice for All.
Wow. Really? Number 1? That's a surprise, Richard. Whatever. I got to say, Richard, I think that we only shared maybe one song on our top 10 list here. That was surprising. I thought that these were going to be a lot more congruent than that.
So I'll go ahead and go next. And an exercise in which you have to cut down these first four Metallica records to 10 tracks can only be described as an exercise in elitism. However, I like to practice a thing called compassionate elitism. So I'm going to have an honorable mention. That honorable mention is The Shortest Straw from And Justice for All. With that being said, my number 10 is Trapped Under Ice, Fuck You Bog. Number 9 is Orion from Master of Puppets. Number 8, another cut from Master of Puppets, which is Leper Messiah, fucking killer. Yes. So like you, Richard, I also have Fight Fire with Fire at my number 8. At number 7, I have Harvester of Sorrow. At number 6, I have Ride the Lightning. And at number 5, I have One, even though it might be one of the most popular Metallica tracks, it's deservedly so. After that, I have Battery, Creeping Death, and Master of Puppet. That's my top 10.
All right.
That's number one.
I really like that all of our lists are going to be substantially different because mine bears no resemblance to either of yours at this point. So I have an honorable mention. Jump in the Fire from the earliest Metallica record that we have that was not the demo off of Kill 'Em All. Coming in at number 10, I have Sanitarium, Welcome Home. I'm surprised that I don't think either of you had that one on your list because I consider it to be truly a classic.
This is an exercise in elitism. Like, there's, you could honestly make a top 10 list with any one of the songs from the first three records, and I think it would be valid.
Number 9, I have Seek and Destroy. Maybe I have particular love for that track because it is what the San Jose Sharks skate out onto the ice to while it's playing. Number 8, Blackened, is actually truly one of my favorite Metallica tracks, although I feel like it loses points because it's a bit long-winded and the guitar tone on Injustice is not the best in the world. I feel like a cover of this track slimmed down a little bit would absolutely slay. I would love to see a band like Chemist go ahead and tackle that. We're going to mention you. I expect to see that in production in 2023, guys. Coming in at number 7, I have the title track, Ride the Lightning. I've often doted upon this for saying that the tapping featured in the middle of the track's breakdown is supposed to represent electricity rushing through a person's body. It's one of the few times that an instrument is used figuratively inside of Metallica's catalog. I think it's actually quite interesting. Coming in at number 6, I have also the title track, Master of Puppets. While it's often regarded as one of the greatest American records, I like to point out that it's actually a fairly progressive record for what was happening within thrash metal in 1986. The big, clean, melodic passage in the middle was not something that a band like Exodus was doing, so I want to go ahead and give them extra kudos for that. Coming in at number 5 off of that same record, edged it out just a little bit for sheer brutal intensity, I have Battery, one of the fucking most aggressive tracks that Metallica ever did. Coming in at number 4, this is probably going to be the biggest question mark of any of my lists that I have so far, but it truly is one of my favorite Metallica tracks. I think it's way underrated. I have Dyer's Eve, the final track off of And Justice for All. This is basically the fastest song that Metallica ever recorded, and it's James confronting his parental abuse head on in lyrical subject matter. And I think that that's quite profound. And I think that, frankly, it's some of the best lyric writing that Metallica ever put in recording.
Dear mother, dear father, what is this hell you have put me through?
Go back and listen to it, because the moment where he says that he can't survive without them. So there's a personal
I wasn't shitting on it. Okay.
Yeah, there's an internal dialogue that contradicts itself happening there. It's actually quite poetic. I think, like I said before, for a band who I generally kind of roll my eyes at lyrically, oftentimes I think it's a true gem. Coming in at number 3, I have no shame about this one at all. It's a quite popular track, but One is absolutely beautiful. I will always listen to that one front to back. If I hear even a lick of that song, I'm going to be sticking around for the full 7 minutes anytime it comes out. Number 2, I've often said that this is one of the best, and it's too bad to say underrated at this point, but I think that Richard Donahue is going to agree with me on this one. I have Disposable Heroes.
Great song.
Thematically, it's fast as fuck. Also, again, the riffing mimics Machine Gun Fire, and it talks about protesting against the way that human lives are consumed in war and the military. And coming in at number 1, pretty much my favorite Metallica song, could be seen as a little bit of a surface skimmer pick, but I'll defend it until the day I die. I have Fade to Black. It's basically one of the very early progressive songs. It's one of the very early progressive songs where they incorporate some of the clean sections. I think it's basically the best that they ever do it, because it really only gets more poppy and more mainstream from here. But in this early entree from Ride the Lightning, it's basically the peak of that style of Metallica. And I quite love it. So there you go.
It's interesting that you said you wished for a cover of Black and Between the Buried and Me actually does one. You should check it out.
A lot of them exist. I know I've heard them. I just can't remember like a very distinctive one in my mind. I'm definitely I like Between the Buried and Me, so I'll check it out.
Chimera do a killer cover of Disposable Heroes as well from like 10, 15 years ago. It's pretty badass. I've thrown ones like Metal Hammer Comps, Mastodon did Orion. Give her the other two, but
Trillium did Master of Puppets.
Yes, that was that one. Yeah.
I mean, we could do a whole episode on Metallica covers, especially those four records. We'd be here forever. Anyway, that's just how we wanted to whet everyone's appetite, get you all prepared for some Metallica discussion as we move on now into the main meat of this episode, which is our review of the new Metallica record, 72 Seasons, which, like Dyer's Eve, is supposed to be a little bit of a commentary on everyone's formative years, the first 18 to be specific, of all of the band members. Whether it's one of their finest hours or just another entry in a slightly underwhelming Metallica catalog, we'll let you know. I would say, first off, it's important to say that whenever there's a new Metallica record that comes out, either by their own admission or by reviewers or by fans, everyone is always trying to say what mix of albums the new record is. I remember very clearly when Death Magnetic was released, Kirk Hammett was, I guess, on the publicity trail saying this is the missing link between Injustice for All and the Black Album. And when Hardwire for Self-Destruct came out, it was very much this is the Black Album meets yada, yada. This one is the Black Album meets the Load and Reload era. However, on first impression, I listened to the record three times the whole way through. I actually think this is a more fleshed out and superior version of the Load and Reload era of Metallica. I think it's a little more metal focused, a little more metal leaning. And instead of James Hetfield vocally doing, yeah,
you ain't my bitch.
There's a little bit more of a mature approach to, I think, the lyrics and the vocal stylings, which I think really complement these songs. Much like in the Black Album and Load, like it's not like this fast, hardcore metal riffing. The notes are allowed to ring out. And so it's very much in that vein of Between Load and the Black Album. Anyway, I don't want to dominate the conversation. Gentlemen, take it away. Richard, you can start off. Give us your first impressions of 72 Seasons, and then we can start getting into more of the specifics.
Well, I just first listened to it today because everyone was talking about Metal Threat. I didn't give a fuck because it was real metal.
We'll edit that out. Why the fuck would you say that?
Okay.
You're killing us here, dude. Kneecapping us on our own show. Right, what the
clean
fuck?
Clean edit. Duh. So my initial impressions of this record are the first little single of Dark to the Sun. I enjoyed a lot. Lux Eterna was all right. And the Screaming Suicide was super meh. And listening to the record as a whole, it's a lot better than I expected. But god damn, is it a slog, though, some of these fucking songs. Like, because after this record, I went back and listened to Hardwire and Death Magnetic. 2 hours each of these records. They're just condensed some of these songs down to like all right, my initial impressions of the record were off the singles. The Dark Side of the Sun I liked a lot. Lux Eterna was all right. Screaming Suicide was kind of shit. And listening to the thing as a whole, it's overall pretty solid for a newer Metallica. The drums sound quite nice, especially by comparison to Death Magnetic or Death Magnetic as a whole production wise. And James sounds really fucking good. His voice isn't shot like saying Death Magnetic as well. Though the songs are just fucking, some of these songs are just fucking slogs. If they would just trim some of
I know this isn't a discussion on Death Magnetic, but I think it's kind of a shot to say his voice is shot on Death Magnetic. He definitely, like the vocal, the things that he's attempting to pull off on Death Magnetic don't come off as well as they do here. He's much more suited for what is going on here on 72 Seasons than for sure. Death Magnetic. But I wouldn't say his vocals are awful on Death Magnetic.
No, I would say they're awful. They have like a this frenzied chaotic energy I actually liked a lot. It fits a lot of the music on that record. I'm not shitting it. It's not like shit. I'm not actually shitting on it, but I guess for more of this laid back Load era thing that they're doing on here, his voice is much better for it than that. He actually pulled it off, whereas that style not so much anymore.
It's interesting you mentioned that, like a laid back sort of Reload era, because obviously on Reload there's songs like Bleeding Me and Hero of the Day and Mama Said and Hetfield tries to get off. Yeah, Hetfield tries to go off into like this fucking country metal cowboy sort of realm, and I think that's why this record actually is better than that era, because it stays metal the whole way through. Maybe not the hardest metal, but metal nonetheless. But without going off on that tangent too much further, Bog, give us your initial impressions as well.
So I want to start out by saying that I am actually a fan of this record. I'm going to say some things here that might perceive that that's not the case. But one of my one of the things that I noticed profoundly about this in comparison to Hardwired to Self-Destruct and Death Magnetic, which I think invariably we're going to be doing a lot of comparisons to being their other two most recent efforts, is that this is a Metallica record. And I'm throwing up air quotes right now to say that when they made Death Magnetic, they felt like they wanted to make a metal record again. They actually wanted to reintroduce themselves to the genre in which many people had cast them out as being depraved and pulled away from, right? This is Metallica kind of, I will say, slotting themselves back into a caricature of what that band was when they entered basically the Load and Reload era. And maybe some people would say that it started with Enter Sandman. I maybe unpopularly still believe that there is a lot of really quality material, as you will see when we do our Metallica later years top 10 lists after this review. And so these comparisons to Load and Reload, which some of these more blues oriented riffs at times I feel are apt, but I also feel like it's executed a lot better, in part because I think that sonically the tone is a lot better. And then one of the other things that I have constantly said is, how is it that James's vocals have gotten so much better so many years after even their most recent effort with Hardwired to Self-Destruct? I feel like there was a noticeable upgrade, and I'm assuming that it has to be fake. I'm just going to say that. I think that this is probably Pro Tools magic, yeah.
It's interesting that you talk about guitar tone, because maybe this is me being totally off base and speculating, but Load and Reload was them begrudgingly being metal, and this is an attempt. Like, they're very much trying to be metal on this record, guitar tone-wise and just in spirit. Whereas in the 90s, I think, like most people, like, metal was passe at this point. And they were like, we're known as a metal band, so we have to do something like passingly metal. But They were very clearly, especially by Reload, like distancing themselves from that whole vibe.
So that kind of ties back into what I started this review out to say, that I think that they are remembering a caricature of themselves after they had found an extreme level of fame. And their knee-jerk reaction is to do maybe this sort of slower tempo, bluesier style of guitar riffing and writing, because they themselves believe that they're geniuses and they can get away with some of these lackluster riffs. And so I'm going to call out in particular, Gone Too Far Gone is such a piece of shit in terms of like the riff.
I actually like the
thin
song,
the
actually.
Thin air at the top of the ivory tower, dude, messes with the brain chemistry.
I remember back to some kind of monster tapper, film, and Lars is standing on the table saying that he thinks that the riff sounds stock. If there ever was a stock riff in this catalog, that is it. And I think that one of the biggest downsides to this record is that there are times where it feels like the aging fingers of these at one point peak metal musicians are frankly just lethargic. One of the things that I've said is that many of these songs are overly long-winded. I think the majority of them are over 5 minutes. Many of them rank between 6 and almost 8 at this point. So
this album is 12. 1 hour and 17 minutes.
I'm known for saying that we need to leave a lot on the cutting room floor. I think that every single one of these riffs, especially the ones that aren't straight off of iStock, could be a lot better if they go ahead and gave us less of them, because it would leave us longing. But I think that because they are, again, throwing up air quotes here, reinvigorated about themselves being Metallica, they didn't have the sounding board of a flop of a record in Saint Anger to propel them in the way that I think they did on Death Magnetic, as well as maybe a little bit less so in Hardwired to Self-Destruct, that they were okay doing that.
I said that a lot of the times it felt like they created these songs on a MIDI pad where they would go ahead and create one loop and then James would just sit there and press a couple of buttons and listen to how he felt the song built out using a lot of these loops and a lot of these samples. And I think that that itself is one of the biggest letdowns of this record, is that while some of these riffs are cool, they don't fucking variate and they go on for 10, 12, you know, 16 bars a lot of the time at the beginning of these songs. I think that we needed to go ahead and condense these all down to about 4 minutes. And we're going to be longing for some of the intricacies of the riffs and also add a little bit of variation in here. And we would take this from a record that is very listenable and at times very fun. Sonically, it's very good. There are good elements of it. One of the things I wanted to say about this is that, you know, listening to it, I kind of forgot that like Metallica is fucking great. I had that moment where I was like, you know what? I don't really listen to them very often anymore these days, but it made me long for my days when I was still in high school and I was jamming Injustice for All the time. And I went back and listened to those records as a result of that. And so clearly they captured some part of nostalgia, which for me is not the Load era on this, right? That we just talked about what our top tens are, and so you can see the worship that I had for, in particular, Ride the Lightning and Master of Puppets.
We all know you long for the days of the Memory Remains, dude. Give me fuel, give me fire, that which I desire. Come on.
So in recap of pretty much everything that I've said, I think that this record suffers because it's a little bit long-winded, and I do think, as I said, the lethargic fingers on the fretboard, we need a little bit more variation on some of these riffs. The builds are often sucky, but the upside is that James has managed to resurrect his voice from a place that I, you know, thought it was never coming back from. And again, I assume it's fake. Duel, we saw some of those videos that you posted when they were in Prague, and I'm just not going to say it was probably not their best performance ever.
It might have been some BPM shaved off. Yeah. Kirk Hammett was doing an impromptu rendition of some solo, shall we say.
I just want to call it a couple of, you know, just to get into the nitty gritty here, since that was really a general. I have to say that the first few singles that they released, so Lux Aeterna and Screaming Suicide, are some of the worst tracks on this record. Like,
it's funny you said to leave some on the cutting room floor. Lux Aeterna shouldn't be on this record. Dude. It's so tonally different and like stylistically different from everything else. I don't know why it's here.
Though it does have one honor. It's the shortest goddamn song on the fucking record of 3.5 minutes. So I get mad respect for that. Like, holy shit, a song in 4 minutes.
It's also the biggest cock tease. The first 12 seconds of that remind me of something you'd hear on Injustice for All. Like, okay, we're about to get like a heavy ass banger. And then it turns like to the most generic dad rock track you could think of.
Dad rock. Oh man. That's where we are these days, aren't we? We're all sliding quietly into dad rock. All right, yeah, fuck those songs. But I gotta say, man, Duel, you have said it in the past that typically there's one song that makes these things worth existing for. And I can't say how high I am on If Darkness Had a Son. I know that we reviewed it on the previous episode, yes. But my God, that track slays. Like, I'm getting excited just even talking about it here, man. That one is fucking great. I want to go see them live for the sole purpose of hoping that they would play it, because I'm sure that the crowd reaction would be fucking phenomenal. So
yeah, I agree with everything you said there for the most part. Enamorata, 12 minutes long. What the actual fuck? Why?
I kind of like it. I'm not gonna lie. I think it's a good end cap.
You know what? I'm gonna side with Richard on this one, actually, because like I gotta say, for me, it's like they almost felt like they're trying to be Mastodon. When I went back and listened to it, like in the way that it's chugging.
Cry is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence.
Hey, you know what? Like, at least Metallica is aspiring to some of the best in the genre. It means that they're connecting with metal again. Although, even though I just made the whole point to say that they're just being the caricatures of themselves that they got at the Venice Pier, you know, for $10. Like
72 seasons is like 7.5 minutes. That could be 5 minutes. I agree with you totally. If Darkness Had a Son, as much as I love that song, could also probably lose a minute or two. Like, I was talking to Richard before we got on air. There hasn't been a Metallica record under an hour since Master of Puppets. Like, this self-indulgence they got into starting on Injustice for All never went away.
Yeah, it's a shame.
They've been struggling with this for decades now. Like, we're in the third decade of them struggling with this. Saint Anger is over an hour long.
Y'all, that's insane. Let me say this. Do you feel, because to me, Justice doesn't feel like it drags on. I think that this record drags on. Hardwired to Self-Destruct, to me, is every single one. I was like, holy fucking shit. Like, they need to condense this way down. Like, that was them trying to be a prog band for a minute there, and it just does not land at all. Like,
you know what? If Metallica went classic and they cut down Hardwired to Self-Destruct from 12 songs to 8, that would be an all-time Metallica record.
I can come along with you on that because in terms of the comparison, I went back and listened to that one again. And while I don't think it was as effective as Death Magnetic, I think that what I had to acknowledge is that was probably the nostalgia because I was so excited for Death Magnetic when it came out. That was a hotly anticipated record for me personally. And Hardwired was not because I think we all knew what to expect at that point.
If you had Broke, Beaten, and Scarred, Cyanide, The Day That Never Comes, All Nightmare Long, The Judas Kiss, Suicide and Redemption, My Apocalypse, and I don't know, you can choose one of the other the three and cut the other four songs, that's a banging album. Even more so if you cut a minute or two off some of those other songs that are too bloated.
Yeah, it's like, as great as Just For All is, as you saw by list, is probably my favorite now, currently the classic Metallica era. That song started this just bloat and gloat, and they're just trying to hey Jace, let me shave a couple of minutes off this. I'm not sure if that's pride or thinking all the success of the 80s that they're geniuses, that they can just get away with it.
They think that they're really good. That's what I felt like on this record. I think that I like this one more than Hardwired because it does slightly more pointed, but I don't like it as much as Death Magnetic, and I can't discern if that's because in some ways I feel like this is a more fun record than Death Magnetic, you know, but I said before, I think that Death Magnetic was an attempt for them to try and re-engage with metal, whereas this one feels slightly more lighthearted. Y'all disagree? I mean, thematically, I would say that this one is trying to them deal with some of, you know, their history and whatnot, and so this characterization of them acknowledging being Metallica is apt. But in terms of the way that the album feels, there's a bounciness and you know, grooviness to 72 Seasons that I feel like we didn't see as pronounced on.
I really hope the lyrical themes of them analyzing the first 18 years wasn't inspired by, yep, put our hands up, we're Metallica guys, this is what it's like to be us. I really hope that wasn't the inspiration for it. But as far as it being more fun than Death Magnetic, I don't know, dude. Have you heard the chorus of Cyanide? Fuck.
I know you love that song. It's not on my later years top 10
list. I mean, Judas Priest, Judas Kiss, All Nightmare Long. Like, the choruses on Death Magnetic are so catchy. And they're backed by usually some really aggressive, thrashy riffing. Even if it's just James and Kurt plowing away on that open E string, it at least feels metal.
I'm aware lyrically what they're going for here, but honestly, some of these songs, I don't know what the fuck he was talking about. They're so fucking vague. Like, 72 Seasons I liked, then the next couple of songs are kind of snoozy till You Must Burn, which I do like, but that's about the Salem Witch Trials.
You Must Burn is good, and it also, I always love it when they put a punctuation in the song title. We have two of those.
Yes.
Too Far Gone, ! And also You Must Burn, !
Song title aesthetics. You won't get that on any other metal podcast. Ooh. Let me tell you.
All right.
I think Chase It Light's another killer song as well. So, though, Crowd Barbed Wire is dog shit. Let's talk about the songs that suck.
Screaming Suicide's terrible. Crown of Barbed Wire fucking sucks.
Screaming
dude.
Suicide is not terrible. Oh, it's just inoffensive. It just exists.
It's a fucking seltzer. It's a seltzer beer, man. It's inoffensive.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Like, it's a solid 5 out of 10. It's just there.
Even songs like Rooms of Mirrors, it's a decent song, but the chorus, James Hall's feelings and shit's really fucking weird. The chorus, I don't fucking like it.
Okay, for posterity, we're going to go through this track list one by one, and we're going to say the good songs and the bad songs, and then we're going to talk about why the bad songs are shit. 72 seasons, we all agree. Good. Yes.
Long, though. Man. Way too long.
Agreed.
Definitely.
Agreed. Way too long. Could lose a minute or two. Shadows Follow. Good song.
I fuck with it. Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Screaming Suicide. I say inoffensive. You both hate it.
Thumbs down. Fuck that song. Yeah. Get it out of here.
Okay. Sleepwalk My Life Away is the, like, there could not be a more self-tell title on a song. This track could be cut from the album.
You know, I kind of like his grovelly vocals, though. Like, they're sort of in the middle. This is the moment where James decided he's going to forge a new vocal styling for himself and kind of embrace it a little bit. The first time I ever heard it was actually on My Apocalypse off of Death Magnetic, but it also
My Apocalypse.
Yeah. I'm not going to say thumbs down on Sleepwalk My Life Away. It's way too fucking long. But we might be divided on this one. All right.
Yeah, 2 out of 3 say Sleepwalk My Life Away, so it sucks. You Must Burn. Good song.
Thumbs up.
Good song.
Yep. Lux Eterna. Trash. Should not be on the record.
Yeah. That shit sucks.
Yeah, it should not.
It's all right.
I think I'm in the minority. I think Crown of Barbed Wire has that Alice in Chains vocal sort of gang vocal thing going on. I like the song. I think you both dislike it.
So boring. Oh my God. Like that intro is just like, dude, can we fucking get wood already? Like, what are we doing here?
I don't know. They've had too much gin, like Richard last night.
Oh,
way too much.
Like Richard right now?
Oh God.
I've only had 2 shots we start recording, so that's it.
I don't know. For the listeners at home, Richard's fully erect. We can both see it right now.
All right.
Chasing Light. Good song.
Thumbs up.
Yes.
Love that poppy riff there. It's almost Motley Crue-esque, like really something I haven't seen from Metallica in a long time, but it's a lot of fun.
And then number 9, If Darkness Had a Son, highlight of the album. We all agree.
Absolutely. Yes. Huge thumbs up. One of the best later era Metallica tracks.
Yeah. Easily. Like the rest of the album could literally be Saint Anger, but if this song was on there, like it justifies its existence. Too Far Gone. Solid. I have nothing to say.
I like it. Toe Tap. Right. Oh, man. This uninstinctive.
This is so like fucking it. Boring. Like I said, it's like, could we just get like a little fucking shrill in the guitar riffs here or anything, man. Like I said, this is grandpa's lethargic fingers being unwilling to go ahead and variate on the
bro, but there's punctuation in the song title. You should love it.
I'll give him a golf clap for that, but I'm giving thumbs down. Too Far Gone's just trash. At 4 minutes and 34 seconds, thank God it's over quickly.
Exactly.
All right, this next song, Room of Mirrors, I'm going to take the Rotten Tomatoes approach. It gets a 6, so it automatically goes in the fresh meter, but it doesn't mean I love it. So thumbs up.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all, honestly. It bores the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
Okay. Enamorada, fuck this song. 12 minutes, like what the fuck? If you made it's it too 5 long, minutes, yes. If you made it 5 minutes, I'd be about it. But like at 11 minutes and 10 seconds, what the fuck?
It's way too long. I've been like 6-7 minute song. This is a song I see me 7 minutes at working, one of the few.
Let me say this, is that this is an album that really has very few quiet, clean, pretty parts, which is actually something that Metallica really championed in kind of the later half of their career. This is the only moment where we see any of that on this record. And so I want to give it a thumbs up because I think that they actually do it very well. The harmonized guitars in sort of minutes 5 to minutes 9 is actually very cool. And so while it's fucking bloated as a motherfucker, I gotta say that I'm giving this one a thumbs up. I fuck with it.
I also like Bellwitch.
Hey man, I'm a Neopeth fan. Let's fucking go, dude. Black Rose Immortal. Let's go. I'm here for
25
it.
25 minutes.
Yeah. As much as I hate on Metallica for bloat, this 11 minutes and 10 seconds of Enamorada wouldn't even get to like the third note on a Bellwitch song. Let's be real. Okay, so we've gone through it all track by track. We've given our basic overviews. Any final thoughts on 72 Seasons from Metallica? Let's put it in perspective. Where would you rank it in the post Black Album pantheon from Load to now? Because I think it's firmly in the 2 to 3 rank.
Yeah, I definitely say top 3.
Death Magnetic,
top 3 easily.
Death Magnetic, IMO, is firmly number 1.
Yes.
And then it's really a matter of preference, what you like outside of that. Because I could understand if you said Load was 2. I could understand if you said this was 2. I could even understand if you said Hardwired was 2. But honestly, going back and re-listening to Hardwired, I'm not sure there's much worthwhile material there. Outside of Spit Out the Bone.
Spit Out the Bone is sick.
It is. You'll see it on my list, but I think Hardwired, like we talked about songs that justify an album's existence. I feel like they wrote Spit Out the Bone and then just shit out everything else just to put it out.
I'm a pretty big fan of that song, Dream No More. Actually, I like the chorus a lot. I think it's a good ass. Even Man Unkind, it was a stupid fucking title. I like that song, actually. The rest of it, not so much. Here Comes Revenge, Lame, Am I Savage? No, you're not Metallica. No, you're not.
Man Unkind, Unsavage, and the fucking cover art show that Metallica is still in a wasteland of creativity. It's just they are still really good musicians that they just, I would say, through no fault of their own, they somehow stumble into brilliance. Hardwired to self-destruct. No greater self-till.
I feel like I have to be the one to talk about this every time, but Duel, I'm going to quote you here, but you said that the cover for 72 Seasons definitely lands itself firmly in the like, what the fuck is this album art that Metallica is becoming kind of known for.
Yes, like let's be real. It's like since Load, like I guess what was Load? The Piss Christ logo or the Piss Christ album?
It was the Blood and Semen was the cover of Load. Yeah,
Blood and Semen. Yeah.
Okay, cool. From the same guy who did Piss Christ, right? The same artist, I think it was. Okay, yeah. So
you load, reload. Saint Anger, the hand with the, I guess the tourniquet.
Yeah, the guy who did the Blood and Semen is the same artist who did Piss Christ. So Piss Christ would have been way crueler of an album cover for Metallica, but way too offensive for what they were trying to do. And the Black Album was just black with like the fucking Gadsden snake in the fucking bottom corner, barely there. Like they haven't had a solid album since And Justice for All.
Yeah, like, that's a great one.
The creative bankruptcy that has been on display for the better part of 30 years is staggering, which I guess when you consider the songs that have been on display too, maybe it shouldn't be so staggering. I don't know. But 72 Seasons, along with Hardwired to Self-Destruct, is shit.
Dude, the Hardwired album cover is like, who fucking bought that, man? Like, I'm just ashamed at all of you.
They
like,
did. And they probably paid six figures.
Yeah, the Crowbar record, they literally directly ripped that shit off. I can't remember which one it is, but it's all their face could join into one. They straight ripped that shit
off. So here's a little industry insight here is that actually very cool ad agency in San Francisco called Turner Duckworth that I definitely tried to work at for a while did the Death Magnetic album cover. And the thing that people don't realize is that it was supposed to be there was a die cut. And so you opened it up. I don't know if y'all ever saw the CD in the booklet. The coffin like progressed. No. So it was actually in its actual format was quite cool. Hardwired is just looks bad, dude. It's like a graphic design one fucking project, like album cover. It's just fucking horrible. 72
It looks like something you just threw together in Photoshop.
72 Seasons is a cut above that, but it looks so CGI that it just feels kind of, I don't know, unrelatable. Like I get it, it's a cradle, it exploded. I don't know. It's kind of no, like, why is everything arranged so perfectly on the ground? You know what I mean?
It's so shit. I would say it looks like a Netflix title, like the little thumbnail that you see when you're scrolling through, but it looks worse than that.
Is this the first album cover that doesn't actually say Metallica on it? I'm realizing that right now as I said that.
Yes. It's a kind of like Slayer with the Divine Intervention, where it's just like the skull pentagram. That was the first one without the
much like that record that sucks.
But fuck you, Vinovich is the best of post season Slayer. Get fucked, bro.
The lowest of bars.
It's better than Diabolus and Musica, but not better than Aggressive Intention or what the fuck is that covers album called?
Based off the strength of Death Magnetic alone, we could argue that post 1990 Metallica is better than post 90 Slayer, which is fucking sad. Talk about lowest of bars, bro.
I don't know. Christ Illusion, man. When we did the Under the Knife, I kind of came around and said, like, actually, Christ Illusion is a fucking strong record. I didn't realize it. There's way too much motherfucking fucks on that, but there's some good riffing there. All right.
They have this in common. They have one record that kind of saves their whole bacon.
Is it score time? Are we doing scores?
Yeah, I think it's score time. So for me, it's obviously not classic Metallica. It can never be classic Metallica. They're not trying to be classic Metallica, and they're probably not capable of being classic Metallica anymore.
Fuck no.
However, with that being said, they do hit some classic notes. They do show flashes of brilliance here and there. But that typical bloat that's been there since And Justice for All is still here. And then there's just some moments of, what the fuck is happening here? I.e. Lux Aeterna. I know you all hate on Screaming Suicide, and I say it's inoffensive, but that track kind of gets there too. Inamorata, even with the cool parts, 12 minutes long, I don't fucking get it. For every step forward, there's a step back, but it takes, let's say, 1.5 step forwards and 1 step back. I would say this is a good record. It's not my favorite Metallica record. It's probably not even my top 5 or 6 Metallica records. I'm giving it a 2.3.
All right.
I'll be a little more generous and give it a 2.5. I do think it's a lot more memorable than Hardwired to Self-Destruct, but it doesn't quite hit the peak that Death Magnetic did. Though I will say that I prefer the production a million times over to that dog shit production that Rick Rubin shit all over. So 2.5 for myself.
All right. Well, turns out I'm going to be the most generous of the trio here. I just want to say that I think that this is a record that reminded me that I love Metallica. And that was what I said earlier, is that when I listened to it, I longed a little bit for some of the earlier material for a band that we often sneer at. And I think that it's worthwhile for that alone. I'm going to give it a marginally improved score from Richard at 2.6.
So Metallica's 72 season gets a 7.4 from us here at the Fundamentalist Podcast. The fun is not yet over here on this special Metallica themed episode of the pod, though. We still have to give our top 10 roundtable edition of post glory years Metallica. This will include the Black Album all the way through 72 seasons. Bog, why don't you get us started?
Yeah, I was gonna say, let's go in reverse order this time. It would be good.
Yeah.
All right. So honorable mention, you know, Garage Inc. was hard to incorporate into this list because on one hand, like, I love some of the tracks, but it's their covers. So my honorable mention on this one is Whiskey in the Jar. I've always loved that version of that song from Metallica. Maybe that's
way more different than the original. I actually, once I heard the original, like, wow, this is a completely different fucking song.
Well, it's a cover, honestly, of the Thin Lizzy track, which itself is actually pretty cool. But anyways, yes. I've always loved it, so I'm going to give that one a shout.
Which, isn't the Thin Lizzy track a cover as well? Like, isn't this like a folk song?
It is a folk song. Yeah, I think the version Thin Lizzy played is, because they were an Irish band, is their own interpretation of it. So they consider it to be the modern arrangement of that track. So it's a cover of a Thin Lizzy song. Coming in at number 10, I have The God That Failed, probably the most overtly anti-religious song that Metallica ever did.
Underrated song.
Thanks, James.
Yeah.
what Christian Science does for a motherfucker.
Coming in at 9, there's going to be a lot of controversial picks on this one, which is why I'm glad I'm going first. I have Nothing Else Matters. I played the song. I do actually really love it. I know that it's controversial because it was their first ballad, but you know what? That song is fucking great. Have you ever seen any?
You saying I've played the song is like a football pundit on TV. Like, I've played the game.
I will say it's one of the more beautiful, poignant Metallica songs. Maybe their most.
Shut up, Richard. Keep going.
Now, I want to say that Nothing Else Matters, I believe, is
about James' girlfriend, I believe.
Oh, man. If this is wrong.
He was poly at the time, like all of them.
Alcoholica.
I can't. Correct me. So does James play the solo? It's on the Unforgiven is the one where he plays the solo, correct? Not Nothing Else Matters.
I'm not about to go on air and say I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he plays the solo on Nothing Else Matters.
Yeah,
I feel that way, actually, that he does. I feel like I've seen that before.
He doesn't do it very often, but when he does, it's worth noting because he's the best guitar player in that band. All right. Coming in at number 8.
Is that debatable?
No,
no.
Coming in at number 8. This is also another weird one, but I gotta show it mad love, which is Blitzkrieg, also off of Garage Inc. This is actually a cover that they play of a new wave of British heavy metal band that was recorded between their first two records. So it's hard to know how to place this one, but it was released way later in their catalog, and I fucking love the shit out of it. So
you're cheating here, bro. You can't use these covers of like well-written songs when they were creatively bankrupt.
All right, coming in at,
because I would have put on Budgie's the cover of Bread Fan from Budgie if that was the case. I would have listed just all the S&M versions of the good songs that they wrote.
All right, I'm sorry if y'all feel like I'm taking some liberties here, but you know what? We didn't fucking define
That's
any
fine.
Rules. All right, number 7, I have Wherever I May Roam off of the Black Album. I love the gong at the beginning of this one. It's definitely epitomizes, I feel like, what they were doing in this era before they turn into like a country band in the later years. And Kirk goes ahead and gets the pencil mustache and the cowboy hat. All right, coming in at number 6, I have Broken Beat and Scarred off of Death Magnetic. This is one of the better tracks off of that record, and I know that they play it live a lot, and I would love to go ahead and see them do that, but it's pretty groovy, and like I think that this is one of the flashes of riff brilliance that we see on that record a lot, if not overall. Aggression is maybe a little on the subdued side for Death Magnetic.
I think flashes is a little derogatory for that record. I think the riff brilliance is actually a defining characteristic of that album. I think the riffs are good more often than not.
I'll come along with you on that one. Maybe that was harsh. What I'm trying to say is that it's a riff-driven song rather than anything else. Broken, Beaten, and Scarred is a little bit perfunctory title. I feel like that's sort of, again, graphic design one level creative here. So moving on to my top five, I have Of Wolf and Man coming in at number five off of the Black Album. I think that this is them attempting to be a metal band on the Black Album. So maybe the producer was out getting drunk that day and not guiding their hand over to something that was a lot more commercial.
The S&M version of this song is sick.
It is, yeah. Coming in at number four, I have End of the Line off of Death Magnetic. I think that this is one of my favorite tracks off of that record. Duel, I know that it's not one of the ones you typically listen to, but I think the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da is fucking sick. And so if you want me to go ahead and mime the rest of that for the listeners to enjoy, I can continue to do that. But I think that for me, this symbolizes a little bit of a reinvigoration of Metallica. I think that myself was anxiously awaiting what Death Magnetic was going to sound like, and being the second track off of that record definitely signaled and signified a recommitment to heavy metal at that point, which is very important to me. So that's why I get so high on my list. Coming in at number three, I have my only entry from 72 Seasons. If Darkness Had a Son, this song fucking rules. Top three tracks. That Metallica.
Have you come around to the lyrics now that you know where it comes from?
I have.
It's like Dyer's Eve Part 2.
Yeah, I actually, one of the things that really sold me on it is when it comes in originally before they get into the groovier chorus part where he's just screaming Temptation is actually really sick. Especially when I've been driving, I found myself like singing along with that part, and I'm sure that it's going to be powerful to see a crowd going ahead and chanting Temptation over and over again with them. Like, that being said, I don't really place Metallica's lyric writing as high as any other band's, but I'm not hating on it nearly as much as I was when we reviewed the single. Coming in at number two, I have Spit Out the Bone, my lone entry off of Hardwired to Self-Destruct. This shit is fast and fucking furious, and as we said before, pretty much the reason why that album even exists. As you said, Duel, they probably wrote that song and said, you know what, we should probably tool an entire fucking record around this one song. It's one of the...
You got to give Metallica credit. They were writing songs about ChatGPT 5 years before it was out.
Yeah. I love the visual of Spit Out the Bone, too, because it's actually quite carnivorous, right? But it's a very visceral and evocative line to go ahead and call a song. And then this is going to be a controversial pick here, but I'm just going to go ahead and dive in on it. But coming in at number one, I have The Unforgiven off of the Black Album.
Yes. Fuck yeah, I love that goddamn song, dude.
It's one of the
1000%.
It's one of the few times that I've ever seen sort of like heaviness used in the chorus part or the verse part of a song. I, with my Fade to Black number one choice for the early years, also really love this melding of the pretty and the heavy. And I think that this is the best example that we have of that from Metallica in the later years. So there you go.
Okay, so for my list, I'm going to start off with my compassionate elitist pick, and that is Until It Sleeps, the S&M version, mind you, just to make it even more underground and cult.
Ooh, man.
This list is actually going to be a little bit... Bog and I have a little bit more in common on this list than we did on the last one. I also, at number 10, have The God That Failed. Coming in at number nine, another track that Bog had on his list, albeit a little bit lower, I have If Darkness Had a Son. I also mentioned the S&M record, so I'll go ahead and mention it. At number eight, I have No Leaf Clover. Coming in at number six from Death Magnetic, I have The Judas Kiss. The verse riff isn't necessarily that great, but goddamn, this is one of the strongest choruses that Metallica has written since probably Injustice for All. Cannot fuck with it. Cannot. After that, I have Of Wolf and Man, like Bog. I think we only have one spot difference between this. I don't know where this came from when it comes to the Black Album. And obviously, Metallica is not going to listen to me because that record is still selling like hotcakes. But I wonder what it'd be like if whatever headspace they had when they wrote this song, that whole record sounded like this. That'd be pretty fucking cool. Afterwards, I also have another song Bog already mentioned, which was Spit Out the Bone. The only reason that Hardwired to Self-Destruct is represented on this list. It's by far the coolest track on that entire record. The only reason that record should exist. And it's one of the strongest Metallica tracks that's been released in the last 30 years. After that, I have Sad But True. Really surprised that didn't show up on Bog's list because although it's one of the lead singles from the Black Album, it's deservedly one of the lead singles from the Black Album. It's not like it's Enter Sandman or fucking Holier Than Thou or any shit like that. Fantastic song. It's iconic. Yes. It's fucking sad, but
fuck
true.
Yeah, no.
After that, at number three, I have Cyanide, also from Death Magnetic. Might have expected it to come into my number one with how often I mention it from newer Metallica. Also has one of the best choruses that they've written in a long time. The first time I saw Metallica in 2007, one of the highlights of their whole show was when they played this song, which is probably what really drives my love for it. It's been there ever since this album came out. Coming in at number two, bit of a shocker, Wherever I May Roam, another fantastic track from the Black Album. what else can be said? It's Whatever I May Roam. You've all heard it 100,000 times. It's a little bit slower, but it's also super heavy at times too. And as someone who was blessed to be able to travel around the country, albeit not as religiously as Metallica did, it's almost like an anthem of sorts for being on the go. I kind of love it for that reason alone. And coming in at number one, it's All Nightmare Long from Death Magnetic. Super thrashy riffing. It's like they caught lightning in a bottle one last time. They sold their soul to the devil to capture it one last time. And it's this song. The chorus is fantastic. The riffs are fantastic. James's vocals are in rare form on this track. I can't sing its praises enough. It's the spit out the bone of Death Magnetic, except Death Magnetic is a strong enough record that there's probably four. There's probably four spit out the bones on that record.
So my top 10 list is a lot different from y'all. So it's pretty. Can't wait for the reaction. So coming at number 11, we have So What off the Garage Inc., which is a Anti-Nowhere League cover, which is apparently the famous song that ruined James's vocals from this point on. At least that's what I'm read on the internet. But I always really liked this cover. I thought it was
this
fun.
Track ruined James' vocals, and you including it just ruined this episode. What the fuck?
I was going to say, Reddit definitely knows. Thanks for that insight. We have some fucking experts on that one.
Apparently so. So coming in at number 10, we have Dream No More off Hardwire. I really like the song a lot, and the chorus is really killer.
This is not starting well.
Oh, it gets worse from here, brother.
I have no doubt. It gets worse.
Coming at number nine, we have Hero of the Day from Load.
Cut his mic. Mute.
Are you the only one who actually has a track from Load or Reload? I mean, I thought that we were just universally banishing those ones.
No.
Ain't my bitch is coming in at number two. Incoming.
You ain't my bitch.
Number eight. Coming at number eight, we have The Unforgiven 2. I think it's a fuck. Minus the dog shit solo. I hate the solo of the song. I think it's really enjoy the song a lot. coming at number seven, we have The Memory Remains. Also,
this could not get more cringe, dude. I don't know what's worse, Dave, who wrote it, or you who enjoyed it.
Coming at number six, we have Some Good Shit. It's Sad But True from the Black Album. One of my first singles off this record. This was actually one of the gateway records, along with Pantera, Vulgar Display of Power, and a Killswitch Engage, End of Heartache. So it's a record that holds a special place in my heart. So coming at number five, we have My Apocalypse off Death Magnetic. Fucking banger fucking song. Great chorus. And probably, as we all previously discussed, probably the best modern Metallica record by fucking far. Coming at number four, also another Death Magnetic track, All Nightmare Long. Just fucking great, dude. Just kicks all sorts of ass and really captures that 80s style Metallica in a modern sense. And the video is really cool too. I thought the video is pretty badass as well, which I can't say for a lot of Metallica videos. Coming at number three, we have My Friend of Misery off the Black Album, kind of a more underrated song that I've always really enjoyed. Coming at number two, we have the original Unforgiven, which I've always been a big fan of. Sorry. And number one, probably a really odd choice, but I've always thought of this as like the Fuck Yeah America song, but Don't Tread on Me.
Bro, come on.
Clean edit. Say that again. With Stop Trolling, what's your real number one?
No, that's literally it.
What the fuck? How? What?
I just always really like that fucking song.
Oh my God.
What? What do you like about that song? What is there to like?
I think it's a really fucking killer song. If it was a troll, I'd tell you.
That's baffling, dude. Like, I'd have accepted if you said some kind of monster is your number one over that. Like, that song's just...
Dude, you said you love The Unforgiven and you choose that piece of shit over that track? Come on, bro.
It's the definition of filler, dude. Yeah. Like that.
If you would like, I will edit and retool 2 and 1 if it's that big.
Like Enter Sandman or something, Wherever I May Roam. Like that is a filler song on that record. How is that your favorite track? What the fuck?
I don't know. I always thought it was really catchy, but it stuck with me over these
catchy. What is catchy about it?
Oh, I don't know. It resonates with me.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm from Mississippi. I bleed red, white, and blue.
Goddamn right. These are the colors that I believe.
Sad. Fucking tragic. All right. That's going to do it for our top 10 list of Metallica songs. Sorry for that downer that we ended on. If you want to send us in your top 10 Metallica tracks, whether it be from the golden era or your post-Black Album era, or maybe a combination of the two, you can let us know on Instagram at The Fundamentalist Podcast or on Facebook at The Fundamentalist Podcast, or you could even send us an email at thefundamentalistpodcast@gmail.com. Before we leave, we have a very somber announcement. Bogrovich?
So after episode 100, I'm going to be taking a hiatus from this podcast. I want to thank everybody who listens in to me go ahead and wax about heavy metal and critique artists and basically, giving me the time of day to go ahead and talk about this genre in which we love so dearly. At this point, it's just a scheduling conflict, but I leave it at hiatus because I have every intention of trying to return at some point in the future. And so in the meantime, please continue to support Richard and especially Duel, who has been leading the charge on this for so long with so many different folks at his helm.
Lineups.
and keep it fucking brutal, everyone. Horns up.
The thing you should all take away from this is I drive everyone away. Whether it be in my musical endeavors or my podcast endeavors,
I was going to say, luckily for me, you could pull the Varg and come and try and fucking murder me. But unfortunately, there's an ocean between us at this point.
But fortunately or unfortunately for you, Richard was also on his way to kill you. like that crew butcher. So I don't know. Maybe look over your shoulder.
Tits.
I mean, you're in New Orleans, dude. Your head should be on a swivel regardless. I don't think I should be the chief of your worries in that city, but we'll see. Obviously, sad to see you go, brother. I've loved having you on the podcast. You've been by far, the most consistent member outside of myself. Obviously, we had DBO for, I don't know, the first 20 or 30 episodes. And here we are on the verge of episode 100. You've been here for probably close to 70 episodes. I think you might know how many exactly it is, but I think it's about 70. I think you joined the podcast somewhere around 2018, maybe end of 2018, and or maybe end of 2019.
No, it was 18. It was 18. Like, I think I joined, and I think the first episode I sat in on was at the end of 2019 or 2018, excuse me. So it's been a long time coming, man.
Yeah, dude, fucking wild. Like, it's weird that you've been on this podcast almost as long as we've been friends. Like, I met you in 2018, obviously, less than a year after I moved to New Orleans. I think you had just moved to New Orleans about a little under a year since I'd met you. And here we are. I've been doing a podcast together almost the entire time, sharing our love for heavy metal, talking shit the whole time. And it's been a blast, dude. Really hope it's only a temporary hiatus. I'd love to have you back on. Love to have you back on permanently in the future. But even if during the hiatus, I hope you are open to guesting from time to time if we have a particularly interesting topic to broach. With that being said, cheers to you, sir.
Yes, cheers.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate that.
Till you return.
I'm always interested. If I'm good for nothing else, it's a controversial take on some kind of record. So please keep me in the loop. I'm not leaving the Slack channel, so I'll still be engaged.
I've already written you off already, so that's fine. I jest.
Well, I wrote you off after your top 10 list, Metallica list. So, I mean,
understandable, it was
pretty a solo project going forward now.
Yeah, dude, don't tread on me. That one is fucking shocking. Like,
that shit's unforgivable, dude. Damn near unforgivable.
Well, I figure I had to do something else to top my Heathen Empire of the Blind weight hypnosis fucking score. So I had to do something to become the new that. So I figure this would be it.
This is worse.
I'm okay with that.
This is one of the the greatest affronts to good taste that's ever taken place in this podcast. And this is the same podcast that has phrases like, let's fuck this pig, as it were. It doesn't get worse than this. Thank you all very much for listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast. And Donahue and I will talk to you next time.